We're making excuses for them. Really, as it were, you know, we're not quite so damned as we were. One does not apologize for the gods and at the same time feel quite utterly prostrate before them. If this were a real existence, and all of us real persons, with real standards to judge by, I'm afraid we'd have to be a little severe with some of these Mr. Simonses. As it is, of course, seriousness seems out of place. We note an amusing little touch in the indefinite allusion to a man, who with his unnamed family, had considered that he had seen a stone fall. The man was the Reverend W. Carus Wilson, who was well known in his day. The next instance was reported by W. B. Tripp, FRMS that, during a thunderstorm, a farmer had seen the ground in front of him plowed up by something that was luminous. Dug. Bronze axe. My own notion is that an expedition to the North Pole could not be so urgent as that representative scientists should have gone to that farmer and there spent a summer studying this one reported occurrence. As it is unnamed farmer somewhere no date. The thing must stay damned. Another specimen for our museum is a comment in Nature upon these objects, that they are of an amusing character, thus clearly showing that they were of terrestrial, and not a celestial, character. Just why celestialite, or that of it which, too, is only of intermediateness should not be quite as amusing as terrestriality is beyond our reasoning powers, which we have agreed are not ordinary. Of course there is nothing amusing about wedges and spheres at all, or Archimedes and Euclid are humorists. It is that they were described derisively. If you'd like a little specimen of the standardization of orthodox opinion. Amer. Med. Jour. 4-589. They are of an amusing character, thus clearly showing that they were of a terrestrial and not a celestial character. I'm sure not positively, of course, that we've tried to be as easygoing and lenient with Mr. Simons as his obviously scientific performance would permit. Of course it may be that subconsciously we were prejudiced against him, instinctively classing him with St. Augustine, Darwin, St. Jerome, and Lyell. As to the thunderstones, I think that he investigated them mostly for the credit of Englishmen, or in the spirit of the Royal Krakatoa Committee, or about as the commission from the French Academy investigated meteorites. According to a writer in Knowledge, 5-418, the Krakatoa Committee attempted not in the least to prove what had caused the atmospheric effects of 1883, but to prove that Krakatoa did it. Altogether, I should think that the following quotation should be enlightening to anyone who still thinks that these occurrences were investigated not to support an opinion formed in advance. In opening his paper, Mr. Simons say that he undertook his investigation as to the existence of thunderstones, or thunderbolts as he calls them, feeling certain that there was a weak point somewhere, inasmuch as thunderbolts have no existence. We have another instance of the reported fall of a cannonball. It occurred prior to Mr. Simons' investigations, but is not mentioned by him. It was investigated, however, in the PROC. Roy. SOC. Edity, 3-147, is the report of a thunderstone, supposed to have fallen in Hampshire, September, 1852. It was an iron cannonball, or it was a large nodule of iron pyrites or bisulfuret of iron. No one had seen it fall. It had been noticed, upon a garden path, for the first time, after a thunderstorm. It was only a supposed thing, because it had not the character of any known meteorite. In the London Times, September 16, 1852, appears a letter from Mr. George E. Bailey, a chemist of Andover, Hants. He says that, in a very heavy thunderstorm, of the first week of September, 1852, this iron object had fallen in the garden of Mr. Robert Dowling, of Andover, that it had fallen upon a path within 6 yards of the house. It had been picked up immediately after the storm by Mrs. Dowling. It was about the size of a cricket ball, weighed 4 pounds. No one had seen it fall. In the Times, September 15, 1852, there is an account of this thunderstorm, which was of unusual violence. There are some other data relative to the ball of quartz of Westmoreland. They're poor things. There's so little to them that they look like ghosts of the damned. However, ghosts, when multiplied, take on what is called substantiality if the solidest thing conceivable, in quasi-existence, is only concentrated phantomosity. It is not only that there have been other reports of quartz that has fallen from the sky, there is another agreement. The round quartz object of Westmoreland, if broken open and separated from its loose nucleus, would be a round, hollow, quartz object. My pseudo-position is that two reports of similar extraordinary occurrences, one from England and one from Canada, are interesting. PROC. Canadian Institute, 3-7-8. That, at the meeting of the Institute, of December 1, 1888, one of the members, Mr. I.A. Livingstone, exhibited a globular quartz body which he asserted had fallen from the sky. It had been split open. It was hollow. But the other members of the Institute decided that the object was spurious, because it was not of true meteoritic material. No date, no place mentioned, we note the suggestion that it was only a geode, which had been upon the ground in the first place. Its crystalline lining was geode-like. Quartz is upon the index prohibitory of science. A monk who would read Darwin would sin no more than would a scientist who would admit that, except by the up and down process, quartz has ever fallen from the sky, but continuity, it is not excommunicated if part of or incorporated in a baptized meteorite St. Catharines of Mexico, I think. It's as Epicurean a distinction as any ever made by theologians. Fassig lists a quartz pebble, found in a hailstone bibliography, part 2-355. Up and down, of course. Another object of quartzite was reported to have fallen, in the autumn of 1880, at Schroon Lake, NY, said in the Scientific American, 43-272, to be a fraud. It was not the usual. About the 1st of May, 1899, the newspapers published a story of a snow-white meteorite that had fallen, at Vincennes, Indiana. The editor of the Monthly Weather Review, issue of April, 1899, requested the local observer, at Vincennes, to investigate. The editor says that the thing was only a fragment of a quartz boulder. He says that anyone with at least a public school education should know better than to write that quartz has ever fallen from the sky. Notes and Queries, February 8, 92. That, in the Leiden Museum of Antiquities, there is a disc of quartz, 6 cm by 5 mm by about 5 cm, said to have fallen upon a plantation in the Dutch West Indies, after a meteoric explosion. Bricks. I think this is a vice we're writing. I recommend it to those who have hankered for a new sin. At first some of our data were of so frightful or ridiculous mien as to be hated, or eyebrowed, was only to be seen. Then some pity crept in? I think that we can now embrace bricks. The baked clay idea was all right in its place, but it rather lacks distinction, I think. With our minds upon the concrete boats that have been building terrestrially lately, and thinking of wrecks that may occur to some of them, and of a new material for the deep sea fishes to disregard. Object that fell at Richland, South Carolina, yellow to gray, said to look like a piece of brick. America Jursci, 234-298. Pieces of furnace-made brick said to have fallen in a hailstorm at Padua, August, 1834. Eden. New Philosophy Jour, 19-87. The writer offered an explanation that started another convention, that the fragments of brick had been knocked from buildings by the hailstones. But there is here a concomitant that will be disagreeable to anyone who may have been inclined to smile at the now digestible enough notion that furnace-made bricks have fallen from the sky. It is that in some of the hailstones 2% of them that were found with the pieces of brick, was a light grayish powder. Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, 337-365. Padre Saki explains that a stone said to have fallen, in a thunderstorm, at Supino, Italy, September 1875, had been knocked from a roof. Nature, 33-153. That it had been reported that a good-sized stone, of form clearly artificial, had fallen at Naples, November 1885. The stone was described by two professors of Naples, who had accepted it as inexplicable but veritable. They were visited by Dr. H. Johnstone Lavis, the correspondent to Nature, whose investigations had convinced him that the object was a shoemaker's lapstone. Now to us of the initiated, or to us of the wider outlook, there is nothing incredible in the thought of shoemakers in other worlds, but I suspect that this characterization is tactical. This object of work stone, or this shoemaker's lapstone, was made of Vesuvian lava, Dr. Johnstone Lavis thinks, most probably of lava of the flow of 1631, from the La Scala quarries. We condemn most probably as bad positivism. As to the men of position, who had accepted that this thing had fallen from the sky, I have now obliged them to admit their mistake, says Dr. Johnstone Lavis, or it's always the stranger in Naples who knows La Scala lava better than the natives know it. Explanation. That the thing had been knocked from, or thrown from, a roof. As to attempt to trace the occurrence to any special roof, nothing said upon that subject. Or that Dr. Johnstone Lavis called a carved stone a lapstone, quite as Mr. Simons called a spherical object a cannonball, bent upon a discrediting incongruity. Shoemaking and celestiality. It is so easy to say that axes, or wedge-shaped stones found on the ground, were there in the first place, and that it is only coincidence that lightning should strike near one, but the credibility of coincidences decreases as the square root of their volume, I think. Our massed instances speak too much of coincidences of coincidences. But the axes, or wedge-shaped objects that have been found in trees, are more difficult for orthodoxy. For instance, Arago accepts that such finds have occurred, but he argues that, if wedge-shaped stones have been found in tree trunks, so have toads been found in tree trunks. Did the toads fall there?